You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
January 31st, 2020, the World Health Organization declaring the deadly coronavirus that's killed almost 200 or more in China, spreading to nearly 20 countries, is now a global health emergency. A global health emergency, which means the outbreak is an extraordinary event requiring global coordination. Now, you should not have to be warned by our State Department, but in case you need to have it official, I'll read it for you. The State Department is saying, do not travel to China due to this coronavirus. Do not travel to China. And also pointing out that if you're going to be traveling anywhere in that part of the region, or maybe anywhere in the world at this point, you need to be prepared for travel restrictions to be put into effect with little or no advance notice. This virus spread already placing 60 million under partial or full lockdown in Chinese cities now for a week. The U.S., U.K., Japan, and other countries have been working to fly their citizens out of that area. Well, the Democrats are coming back from their lunch here shortly, and there's a report that Democrats are debating their amendment strategy in the impeachment trial of President Trump, and they might come back and offer a number of amendments, not clear how many or what they will say. If they're going to continue to push this and push it, and they end up getting a vote later today, could come around 4 o'clock Central Time, to bring in witnesses, this thing is going to drag out. And it's next Monday, the Iowa caucus is held, and Tuesday, the President's State of the Union address. By the way, Senator Nancy Pelosi chastising President Trump's legal team, saying, I don't know how they can retain their lawyer status in the comments they're making. Some of them are even lawyers. She's wanting you to believe that they are talking about going around the U.S. Constitution. Yeah, that would be her interpretation, as along with other Democrats. We spoke a moment ago about the election coming up, Iowa caucus starting this Monday. This is a new survey just out from NBC News and Wall Street Journal. It says the White House candidate, Senator Bernie Sanders, taking a slight lead over former Vice President Biden for the first time. It's a nationwide poll, and going into the primaries, it's pretty hard to say what a nationwide poll really means. But it does reinforce at this point what our guest said the other day on this program, Dr. Gerard Lamero, who does forecast models, and he predicted earlier this week, that Bernie Sanders will be carrying the Democrat flag into the general election. Oh, by the way, Senator Elizabeth Warren, she's still trying to get some traction, and she's now releasing what she calls a plan to fight digital disinformation. She wants to push for new laws imposing tough civil and criminal penalties if you disseminate false information related to U.S. elections. Riddle me this, would that include saying that you are an American Indian to help you get elected or get a job? Would that include that, Senator? Or that, is that wrong for me to raise that question? I don't think so. USA Gymnastics still dealing with the fallout from Larry Nassar, the coach that abused several young ladies. USA Gymnastics offering survivors a $215 million settlement. Then this story out of St. Paul, Minnesota, a 36-year-old man convicted of raping his girlfriend's twin 4-year-old daughters, not only causing them trauma and the rape, but also giving them gonorrhea. Twin 4-year-old girls, a 36-year-old man. See, this is where I want to have a father's room. You take somebody like this and you put them in a room and let fathers of young girls come in. And I know it's not what our Constitution allows, but it might definitely put an end to this kind of nonsense.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Wellington Environmental specializes in making your world safer, finding, removing threats to your health. In one facility, occupants were getting sick, but only in one portion of a building. And Wellington Environmental was asked to investigate and soon found air conditioning units in the rooms only in that side of the building were blowing cold air loaded with mold. The AC units in that part of the building were pulling air from a stagnant pond. Mystery solved, threat resolved. That's just one of many Wellington Environmental stories. And then there's a hospital that was going to have to close because of a water main break until Wellington stepped in to help. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You ain't nothing but a hound. It's stupid on the door. You ain't nothing but a hound, dog. It's stupid on the door. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
English are coming. The English are coming. We'll let you know, one if by land, two if by sea. In this case, the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. And the president has led a clear path for them to interfere once again in our elections, as they are currently doing.
Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker. The English are coming. The English are coming. Playing up on the Paul Revere ride. And, of course, saying, but this time it's the Russians coming. And President Trump is giving them a clear path to interfere with our elections again. There is no again. There is no again if you're trying to say they got him elected. I don't want a foreign government interfering in our election, period. But as I point out in the last hour, we cannot hold ourselves out to be so high and mighty because this nation has directly and indirectly numerous times gotten involved in elections in other countries. Obama did it, sending money to a group that was trying to defeat Netanyahu. Obama did it after he left office, going over and endorsing Macron for France in his election, knowing that his name and his resume and everything would help get Macron elected. So we do that. Don't think we don't. But what they're trying to do is, again, trying to sell that run-down, debunked story of Russian collusion in the midst of the impeachment trial that's underway now. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi has already decided that if there are no witnesses called, then it's not a true and proper election anyway.
The president's team is there to dismantle the Constitution of the United States. And some of them are even lawyers. Imagine that you would say ever of any president, no matter who he or she is or whatever party, if the president thinks that his or her presidency, in this case his presidency, is good for the country, then any action is justified, including encouraging a foreign government to have an impact on our elections, which is exactly what our founders were opposed to.
Well, again, there she is, just kind of making up facts as she goes through it. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, doing his work inside the Senate, saying if we don't have these witnesses, this country is headed towards the greatest cover-up since Watergate. It is possible that there will be a vote on this question of whether they're going to have witnesses and additional documents later this afternoon. Maybe, well, let me see, we're at noon, about maybe 4 to 5 hours from now. And they could move to cast final votes on the two articles of impeachment. And GOP senators and aides are now coming out and suggesting President Trump will be acquitted in the early morning hours on Saturday. That will happen over midnight. But, of course, the Democrats are saying, if we don't have all the witnesses we want to hear, if we don't want what we want presented, there's not really a trial, and so you will not be officially acquitted. Nancy Pelosi has already said, you will be impeached forever. It'll be a black mark upon your presidency. These House Democrats tend to deal with a lot of fantasy. I'm looking at a piece, and I'm going to give the credit to Joe Pollack of Breitbart pulling some of this together, talking about how they come up with some misquotes and everything, and they don't have any problem if it's on their side. One of them being the Ukraine call misquotes, talking about the whistleblower complaint, and adding that the complaint was actually inaccurate, the whistleblower admitting finally he had not heard the call firsthand. That didn't help their case, did it? And, of course, at the time, House Chairman Adam Schiff wanted this guy. He knew this guy could nail Trump. But then it ended up, well, he didn't hear anything firsthand. And then if we identify him officially, we start seeing the baggage that he's worked for the Biden campaign and other Democrats in the past, and that he's been quoted by another member of the House Intel Committee, the two of them working together, talking about getting Trump. There's also a fake quote regarding Dershowitz. Once the House impeached the president, the Senate began its trial, and liberal Democrat Alan Dershowitz, who voted for Hillary in 2016, but is passionate about the Constitution, presented the argument a president could only be impeached for criminal-like conduct, not for legal conduct that happened to be in his own political self-interest. Well, Democrats suddenly rushed in and said, so you're saying the president cannot be impeached, no, regardless of how corrupt he is? Alan Dershowitz had his response.
If you have mixed motives, if you are in the public interest and you're trying to help the public, but you're also trying to get reelected, according to Schiff and Nadler, that's a crime. If you have any inkling of motive to help yourself get reelected, they call that corrupt. And they say even a tiny amount of motive to help yourself makes you into a criminal and makes you impeachable. And I turned to all the senators and I said, everybody in this room, every senator, every politician, everywhere, always has one eye toward reelection, another eye toward the public interest. They almost always think it's the same. They also think their own election is in the public interest. You can't make that an impeachable offense. But I never, ever said or suggested or implied that a president can do anything he wants if he thinks his election will help the public interest. That was just a lie, a distortion, and it was stated by Schiff, it was stated by Nadler, it was stated by Schumer, it was stated by virtually everybody on CNN and MSNBC, and it was just categorically false.
And I'll add also Nancy Pelosi, because that's what the story she's been going around, that you can do anything to get elected and you cannot be held, you cannot be charged, you would not have created an impeachable offense. Because anything and everything a politician does, for the most part, from the time they're elected, is to ensure they get elected again. That's the way the game's played. We're not talking about bribery. We're not talking about extortion. We're not talking about threats. We're simply saying that how they vote on a particular issue, that's intended to help them get reelected. Some of the comments they might make about opponents, intended to help them get reelected. But Donald Trump is not allowed to do that. The Democrats do it all the time. They have no problem with making up lies and damn lies and peddling them over and over again. As we already hear from Nancy Pelosi, she's still pushing the Russian collusion narrative. It's dead, it's buried, but she's digging it up again. And, of course, they're already saying, if Trump is not impeached by this Senate, he's still impeached. He's not exonerated. And on top of that, if he wins re-election, we'll go at him again. And they will. When are they going to do the work of the American people? In the midst of all of this, this president has continued. I don't care what you think of him, what you don't like about him. He's done certain things that I applaud. I don't like some of the things he said. I wish he'd stay away from the tweet machine. Sometimes just keep his mouth shut. But I look at the actions. I look at where our economy is, what he's done for dealing with China and tariffs when everybody said he's going to destroy our economy. He's going to put too much pressure on China. Nope. China blinked. He got this new deal between Canada and Mexico and the U.S., and you had the Democrats saying, well, Canada's not going to sign on to it, and if they're not going to, we won't. Well, Canada said, yeah, we'll sign on. And then the Democrats again started stalling. But it's finally done. And it's better than NAFTA. And it's going to help the nation as a whole. And the president, of course, has done numerous other things to help minority groups and rebuild some areas. And not enough as far as I'm concerned, but he's had to battle every step of the way. And when he does do something, he does not get credit for it. They look to tear him down. He stepped forward and gave additional funding to the historically black colleges and universities, many of them on the edge of failing. He said, we must preserve them. They're part of our history, and they serve a purpose for many. That racist did it again. That racist did something to help blacks get an education. And that racist, as I was pointing out the last hour, is signing off, getting his Interior Department, the HUD, and the Attorney General's office involved in looking into missing, abused, and murdered American Indian women and Native Alaskan women. What a racist he is. No, they're not going to accept whatever happens. There is a question still hanging. If by chance, when they get to a vote today, it is 50-50. Mitt Romney's indicated, I'm going to vote for more witnesses. Others are saying, no, we're done with it. We're ready to move on. But if it comes down to 50-50 in the Senate, does the Supreme Court Justice Roberts, overseeing this event, does he cast the deciding vote? Or do we go to the rules of the Senate, and that would mean the Senate pro tem, which would be the vice president, cast the deciding vote, as it's set out in the Constitution? This story has vacillated back and forth. I first reported on it, I guess, maybe a couple of weeks ago. My grandson actually asked the question, asking, does the Chief Justice, can he cast a vote on it? And I said, you know, that's a good question. The very next day, I had one of the experts on and asked him. He said, that's a very good question. We're going to go with a belief that, no, he can't. I went back today to the Heritage Foundation and asked Tom Gipping, whom we had on yesterday, an expert in constitutional law, said, I would really like a clarification from you. Can Chief Justice Roberts cast the deciding vote if it comes down to 50-50? His response, and I'm reading it here, it's never happened before, There's no clear answer. The Senate impeachment trial rules do not address it. I don't believe the Chief Justice has that authority for two reasons. First, since the Constitution gives the sole power to try impeachments to the Senate, the Chief Justice has only the authority that the Senate provides, and it has not done so for this, which frankly would be one of the most consequential events in the entire impeachment process. The words of Tom Gipping, constitutional lawyer with Heritage, and he added, second, the rules provide that even on the questions or issues that the Chief Justice may decide, such as evidentiary issues, the Senate still has authority to overrule him. So the authority about the substantive decisions of the trial always ultimately belongs to the Senate. In other words, nope, the Chief Justice should not have the authority to do so. If it gets to that point, a lot of stuff is going to hit the fan. And keep in mind, the Iowa caucus is Monday. The State of the Union address is Tuesday. I want to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to tell you what Senator Warren is doing, pandering to voters. It is sickening what this woman is doing, trying to pull in votes. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Before we finish with this hour, I'm going to update you on some new information involving the pilot and the helicopter in the crash that killed Kobe and eight others, and also share some personal stories as a pilot and some situations I got into that they're teaching lessons, scary at that, but still teaching lessons. By the way, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, serving over the impeachment hearing in the Senate, just stated that they're now going to have 4 hours of argument by the parties equally divided on the question of whether or not to consider and debate any witnesses or documents to be brought forward. So they're now in the process of doing that for the next 4 hours. Then they will have their vote. Doesn't mean it will all happen in 4 hours. GOP sources and aides are reporting President Trump will be acquitted in the early morning hours of tomorrow. Senator Elizabeth Warren is one of those still locked up in the Senate who wants to be out campaigning, along with Senators Sanders and Klobuchar and Bennett. They've been working Saturdays as well, so Sunday they go rushing out doing what they can, which Senator Elizabeth Warren did this last Sunday. She rushed out to Cedar Rapids to talk to a group and got into a town hall debate back in October that had an effect upon her. So she says if she's elected president, any future Secretary of Education is going to need the approval of a child. She is pandering for votes in a most vile way. Listen to her.
For my Secretary of Education, the first, it has to be someone who's taught in a public school. Hello? And part two, because it came from a young trans person who asked about a welcoming community, and I said it starts with a Secretary of Education who has a lot to do with where we spend our money, with what gets advanced in our public schools, with what the standards are. And I said, I'm going to have a Secretary of Education that this young trans person interviews on my behalf. And only if this person believes that our secretary or secretary of education nominee is who is committed to creating a welcoming environment, a safe environment, and a full educational curriculum for everyone, will that person actually be advanced to be secretary of education.
Oh, they love it. They love it. They applaud it. She said, any future secretary of education that I put forward will have to first meet with this 9-year-old I met, a transgender child, and answer the questions from this 9-year-old transgender child before I will put their name in as a nomination to be my secretary of education. The inmates are ruling the asylum, clearly, if she gets in. She thinks that's going to pick up. Well, of course it will, the LGBT and every 9-year-old, but they can't vote yet. But maybe she doesn't know that. It is amazing. All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk again about some new developments concerning the crash that killed Colby, his daughter, and 7 others. Please stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So the crash earlier that killed Colby Bryant, his daughter, and 7 others, including the pilot, if it had not crashed, it would be just business as usual for Colby because he was often using helicopters. He had already decided that because of the L.A. traffic that he needed to have a helicopter. He wanted to charter one, buy one on his own, which he did, and then he said, the traffic was costing me time away from my family. That is so ironic, what I just said. The traffic costing him time away from his family. And this accident, of course, costing him forever away from his family. And also his young daughter. But Colby got to looking into helicopter. He said, it was when I realized I could get in a helicopter and be anywhere I wanted to be in 15 minutes versus maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours on the road, that was what I was going to do. You got the money. No one faults you for doing that. That's smart, actually. Smart use of time if you're a businessman or just, again, saving time with the family. But it was not a routine flight the other day. There are several things that have been coming out about this helicopter. There are several different directions I can go with it. Let's deal first with a lot of folks have asked about this terrain awareness and warning system, the TAWS, T-A-W-S. It's the kind of thing that they have on planes and some helicopters. You basically get for a jetliner, it even has a similar system where pull up, and controls will begin to shake to alert the pilot that something, you got to get higher. With a warning system on the helicopter, I don't know if it would actually try to take any control of the helicopter, but basically a warning would go out. And It becomes a nuisance warning if it's going off all the time. And if it's a nuisance warning, then pilots end up ignoring it. And when you're a pilot of a helicopter flying at low altitude, you're going to have a lot of warnings suddenly pop up that you're perfectly fine, but the device doesn't know what your intention is, and it considers you're too low for where you are. And if it cries wolf too many times, pilots either shut them off or they don't take them seriously. That's just common. Veteran pilots say it can be a great aid in certain conditions, but it's not really effective if pilots are constantly working in conditions where the alarm's going to go off. One program manager for the Airborne Public Safety Association, who's also a copter pilot, said, "Terrain awareness has its place, but it's not a silver bullet." He said, "Those who fly helicopters in hilly areas know you start building a tolerance to the alerts." In fact, having a TAWS does not guarantee crash prevention. 3 years ago, a medical flight in Alabama, taking off on a rainy, misty night to rescue an accident victim, that helicopter did have the helicopter terrain avoidance warning system. Also had a night vision imaging system, which included night vision goggles and an autopilot. And yet it slammed into trees, killing the pilot, the passengers, and the one they were trying to save. Investigators said the accident happened because of pilot's decision to fly in unsafe conditions, which resulted in loss of control due to spatial disorientation. Spatial disorientation is just, you don't know if you're upside down or not. And when you do instrument flight training, and I've been through this where until change is falling out of your pocket, you might not realize you're upside down. Your butt is giving you one read of what you're doing, and well, you're really not. And they also added that in that crash of that medical flight, contributing to it was a pilot's self-induced pressure to complete the mission. It's a can-do attitude, which can kill pilots. And again, this guy who's a veteran pilot said, "You're trying to like pass a slow car on a two-lane highway, and you see another vehicle coming, but you think you can get around the car and get back in your safe lane, and 99 times out of 100, you may make it, but the time you don't, it's a head-on collision at 130 miles an hour. And he raises a question about the pilot that was flying Kobe and his family, that maybe he thought, I've been in some similar conditions, got away with it before. I've got a Sikorsky. It's a great plane, a helicopter, double engines, double safety redundancy, everything. I could tough it out. Didn't want to be embarrassed in front of a celebrity client. Didn't want to say, we can't fly today. And maybe he thought, if I could just make it through this one little pass of clear weather again, I don't want to be the guy who makes Kobe miss coaching his kid's basketball team. The pilot still had the option to file an IFR plan. IFR is where you get with the controllers, you file the plan, they give you specific directions and headings. You can't just get in the plane or the helicopter and go where you want. An IFR plan would have taken off and gone right up above all the fog and the mist, into the clear sky above all of it, flown the 90-plus miles, whatever the distance was, and then go down through it again on either an instrument approach or an open by then, maybe clear skies at that point, and never would have been in the mist and flying in and out of the mountains. The other thing that's come up about the helicopter, Island Express, which owned that helicopter, had a Federal Aviation Administration operating certification that limited pilots to flying under what are known as visual flight rules, VFR. That means at least 3 miles of visibility, a cloud ceiling no lower than 1,000 feet above the ground. That'd be about 400 feet above the height of the arch. The company did not have certification for pilots to fly with instruments. The helicopter had the instruments on board, approved for instrument flight, and the pilot was certified to fly by the instruments. But because of limitations on how the company is approved by the FAA to operate when carrying passengers for hire, he was required to fly only in conditions of sufficient visibility. In other words, their certification would not have allowed him, apparently, to file IFR, if that's true. Normally in California, they have nice sunny weather, and a pilot on a helicopter just follows a highway, and it takes them right to where they want to go. That's the way new pilots often fly planes. They're still trying to learn to read their maps, and they see a highway, and you're going from St. Louis to Springfield, Missouri. You find 44, and you follow it. And hopefully you're over 44, not 55, and you realize, yeah, I'm going the wrong place. New pilots will make mistakes like that. But again, the issue being a pilot's decision. The only person on that helicopter responsible for the decision to go or not go is the pilot. And maybe it is true. He did not want to be the one to tell Kobe, I can't get you there. And if it's true what I just read, that the owners and operators of the helicopter did not have FAA clearance for IFR flights, even though he was capable of filing and flying by instruments, he would have been in violation to do so, if I'm reading this correctly at this point. There's a lot of this still to be investigated. We all know that. They are going to be looking at mechanical issues. They're going to look at everything else. But the pilot never reported any problem. And in fact, when it went into the hillside, at that point, it was doing pretty much full speed. Did not slow down. He thinks he's got clear conditions ahead of him. I mean, nothing's going to impede his progress. So he was not trying to slow down or anything else of that nature, and suddenly it's there, and there's no time. No time to react. When it took off Sunday from John Wayne Airport, the day was overcast. Not bad, just overcast. And south of the crash site, visibility was 4 miles, well within visual flight conditions. In other words, he could see what he needed to fly VFR. But as they went north, they hit a lowering cloud deck, and visibility dropped to 2.5 miles. When he reached the Burbank area, still well short of the destination, that's when he asked for special visual flight rules that allowed him to fly at less than 3 miles, normally required for visual flight. But then as he continued south and making his turn, the weather apparently worsened. And despite his experience and 8,000 hours of flying, he had made a bad decision. He got himself and those in charge that he was in charge of their lives in a precarious and tragic situation. I am an instrument certified pilot, and I want to share a couple stories with you when we continue to let you know how fast something can go wrong. I'm here to talk about it, but it was a learning experience. We'll be right back.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
In October 2000, Randy Carnahan was flying his Cessna 335. On board was his father, Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan, and an aide, Chris Sifford. They had had an event in St. Louis. They were going to Cape Girardeau, and they're going right direct on the route. It was already a stormy, dangerous night, and they flew right into it. It was already visible on radar. It's not something that popped up. It was bad-looking weather to begin with. If they had gone 60 miles to the west, would have gone around the backside of the storm, gone right into Cape and never encountered anything, maybe then a little turbulence. But Randy decided to go through it, thinking I can get us there quicker, not lose any time. And then he reported at one point one of his instruments was failing. He couldn't see anything, and they had a smaller indicator that would have been a backup, but on the other side of the console toward his father as a passenger, and he would have to keep looking, shifting his glaze and eyes, and in the process trying to fly the plane, and you get disoriented quickly, very quickly. At one point, air traffic controllers had a response from him when they were asking about his twin-engine plane. He said, "We've got our hands full right now." And later it went into the ground. Again, pilot decision. Whether or not there was an instrument failure to be directly attributable, don't go into that. I have flown planes where you have a lightning and storm detector and radar on it. It's not to use to go through storms. It's to avoid them. If you suddenly get caught in one, you use it to the best you can. When I was a beginning pilot and I did not have IFR certification, that means I could fly visual flight rules. In other words, you could put a sheet over the windshield and I couldn't see anything. I could still go where I'm trying to go using instruments. But I was not to that level yet. I was just beginning training. But I'd already been taught before that if you have any issue, first issue, fly the plane. And if you're not sure what you're doing, altitude is your friend. Getting high is not going to hurt you. So I'm trying to fly out of an airport near San Antonio with my youngest daughter at the time, and there was a tropical storm out in the Gulf that was throwing extensive cloud and rain clouds and bands of storms up over Texas and central Texas as well towards San Antonio. I was not IFR qualified. I was not going to take off until we had clear blue. San Antonio control told me that you got about a 15-minute window in between the bands of rain. So we went out, got in the plane, and I took off. And I reached, there was a mountain range up ahead of us, not that high. I don't recall how high exactly, but I knew it was there. But I'm flying, and we're lifting up, everything's fine. And all of a sudden, you ever been in your shower with a glass door and suddenly it just suddenly frosts over immediately? And you can't see anything. That's exactly what happened to the windshield. Now, I don't have visual. I did have blue sky in front of me. I could see clouds on either side, but I was going to go right through that blue and get up on top of the clouds. But now I can see nothing. I'm not certified to fly instruments. And I start praying. I've got my baby girl with me. Lord, do not let me go down with her on board. And I radioed the tower, said, "I'm in instrument condition." Said, "Well, you're not instrument qualified." I said, "I know. I'm telling you to let other planes know I'm in here. I can't see them, so they'll look for me. I'm going to continue climbing out." So all I did was continue to keep the nose up, the wings level, and fly and fly. And somewhere around 3,000 feet, I came out on top. And from then on, it was an easy flight. Years later, being instrument qualified, I'm flying into Spirit of St. Louis at St. Louis. We'd come up out of Cape, beautiful skies there. I could have landed in Cape coming back from Texas. We had some weather up here, but we were told it's 1,500 feet visibility. In other words, I get below 1,500 feet, I'll see everything. That's twice the height of the arch. That was fine. My personal decision-making height was 1,000 feet. I was qualified to fly down to 400 feet, but I was not going to. My decision was 1,000 feet. When you're flying an instrument approach, you lock in on a signal. You have what you call as a glide slope that tells you if you're too high or too low as you approach the runway. The localizer tells you if you're left or right of the runway. I've got everything locked in. I'm slowly going down. The gear is down. We're getting closer, and all of a sudden the localizer just went off. I'm still flying the heading on the compass, but I don't know. Am I off? Am I not? And I call them and say, I've lost localizer. They said, well, you're aiming at the tower. You need to go around. So I'll clean up, go around, lift the, you know, we power up, pull the gear up, go around and do it again. Pilot behind me said he lost the localizer, but he came back. Intercept again. We're making the flight in. Localizer is working. Glide slope working. But we don't break through at 1,000. We don't break through at 800 or even 750 feet. We're approaching 500 when suddenly it breaks through and I can see the runway. And I said, you got to update your information. I never would have flown that low if I'd known the conditions were that bad. I would have gone back down to Cape. So even when a pilot's trying to do the best and sets personal standards, things can go wrong. I love flying. I encourage people to learn it if they want to. But you got to make good decisions. And it starts with, do I go or not go? Thank you again for listening. I certainly appreciate your support. We will be back Monday, same time, same place. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.